East Carolina Manuscript Collection, Oral History Interview, conducted September 29, 1976, with Lieutenant General William K. Jones, United States Marine Corps, retired. This is interview number 3, Reel 2.
The drill instructors require that in the barracks there, they have an office right in the middle, and they're platoons sleep on each end. And before they can come to the, they want to talk to the drill instructor, they have to stand squarely in the doorway, or they call it square the hatch, like the naval term. And they have to knock on the lintel three times, very loud. And many times the drill instructor purposely ignore them to make them do it again, because a lot of the training is to teach the kids not to, some of them have never been aggressive in their life, and that's why a lot of the training is to develop confidence in themselves. Well, it so happened that the first recruit assigned to this young dentist, the dentist was sitting at his desk with his head in hand, as he told me, and he said, this recruit came and he stood in the middle of the doorway and he hit that side of the door three times, just like the DI told him to. Well, of course, that banging didn't help the dentist's head that particular morning, so he looked up at the kid and he said, son, he says, why don't you do that? He says, why don't you use your head? And the kid said, aye, aye, sir. And he stepped over and he hit it three times with his head. So that just shows you the type of discipline that is installed in him. I've already given you my account at Private Broadbent, and that's another very humorous deal, so I won't repeat that. No other instance. It's just a challenging training of fine young Americans. Very rewarding. From Parris Island, I was assigned to the Naval War College as a student, and went up there in 1960-61. I was very senior, really, to be going at that time. I'd had orders once before, the top level school. And they were canceled for me to have another job. So this was about the last chance I would have, and I was, as I said, very senior. In fact, the only senior one up there besides the vice admiral that in command of the school was a Mexican admiral. And, that didn't make any difference. I was still a student. We had a very pleasant year, Newport. Very fine school in Naval War College, and enjoyed the whole curriculum and the challenge. And it turned out to be absolutely invaluable because my next assignment was to the joint staff in the Pentagon. And having had this training at the Naval War College, just like I would have received had I gone to the Army War College or the Air War College or the National War College, I was familiar with joint staff procedures and could fit into that job comfortably. I was in the J3 directorate of the joint staff and was in charge of one of the four sections. It was called the General Operations Section. As such, we developed the first big CPX again, which we named High Heel for no good reason except the project officer came up with the name and I said, okay, and my superior bought it because he just wanted a code name. And that's still being run to this day. 15 years later, they still have an exercise every year. And as far as I know, they still call it High Heel for some reason. They changed it. But the idea was that it was to help the Joint Chiefs exercise their staff. And the messages would go to all over the world to the other commanders in a general situation and special situation. And it would run on for several days, which various communication messages have to be sent, decisions would have to be made and all that. So it's just a good exercise, and they still have them going on. That just happened to be, as far as I know, the first one. I also was charged with starting the organization of what is now called the War Room, because before that it was a very small sort of communication center, and the only one that really had a what could be called a command center was the Air Force, and the Joint Chiefs, in fact, in those days, availed themselves of the sophisticated communication equipment and data processing equipment that the Air Force had used and developed over the years. Of course, a great deal of their expertise was drawn upon to develop this that turns into what is now the War Room. This was a fairly interesting time, of course. It was just before the Cuban crisis, but it was building up to that, so we had some pretty interesting alerts down there. After that, I was selected for Brigadier General while I still was on that job, and as such, was promoted out of the job. And I was moved over to Headquarters Marine Corps. This was 1962, October.
Before the Cuban Missile Crisis?
Yeah, because that happened after that. But I was at Headquarters.
Late in October.
And there I was assigned what's called the legislative assistant to the commandant. And that means that you're in charge of the liaison with Capitol Hill for the Marine Corps. The Marine Corps has a very small organization, running to 15. In those days, I had two officer helpers and three or four clerks, and that was it. We worked closely with the Navy Office of Legislative Affairs, OLA, which is over in the Pentagon, and services, Secretary of the Navy, the whole Department of the Navy,
inform the Marine needs and Marine programs.
Precisely, and answer their queries, because they get a tremendous amount of mail from their constituents, either wanting information about their sons or daughters that are in the services, or complaining about what happened to their sons or daughters. They get a lot of mail from service people, which they are complaining about something. And so they then forward it over, and then you're supposed to provide the basis for a reply to it. And then you have to arrange for all of the hearings, the budget hearings, as they are scheduled. You can, it's up to you to keep the commandant or your chief of service. They all do the same, although, of course, the Air Force and the Army and the Navy are much larger now. Larger, have to have a larger number of people involved in this thing. And so that was very interesting, of course. And right after that, the Cuban crisis, and I was there when President Kennedy over the last week that the announcement did. Quickly fascinating there, except that I...
Now, where did you say your office was while you were...
At Headquarters Marine Corps. And Headquarters Marine Corps office is not in the Pentagon. It's in what's called the Navy Annex, which is right up the hill.
Navy Yard.
Yeah, it's right up the hill from the Pentagon. It's up on the, it was built.
Oh, it isn't part of the Navy Yard.
No, no. We have our museum down there, but it's not even close to the Navy Yard. It's just up the hill. It looks down on the Pentagon. In fact, it was built as a warehouse for the Pentagon. And so for elevators, it still doesn't have these freight elevators in it.
What kind of pandemonium resulted when the announcement was made of the Kennedy assassination?
Well,
what kind of reaction?
The reaction was shock and displeased. We were very, Kennedy was very popular with the Marines. He was pro-Marine, so naturally that would make him popular with us.
Well, I think I recall that we were placed on alert immediately.
Oh, yeah. It was we went into this DEFCON, as they call them, defense condition, maybe TV and all down, or 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and it is down. So, and that took me, and we formed up a round-the-clock watch, and we take turns on it, all the brigadier generals. There was always a general officer, either a brigadier or a major general, and he would spend the night right down there, right by our war room, in our headquarters, to be available for any query from the Pentagon, or to pass on any word that required a decision from the decision makers, like the commandant or the chief of staff, or his designated senior advisors. And that lasted for about 11 days, as I recall. And, but there was no other action taken for that, except all the units were placed on alert. We didn't move around or anything like that. So then I received orders there to go to take command of the Marine Corps base of 29 Palms, California, which has a double-hatted. You have command of the base, and you also have command of what's called Force Troops, Fleet Marine Force Pacific. Force Troops are those troops that are too specialized, and there's not enough of them to be an integral part of a division. aircraft battalions, 2 long-range artillery, 155, force engineers, heavy bridging company, force service battalion, that type of thing. So you had 2 staffs, one for the force troops, because you wore 2 hats, and you had 2 bosses. You worked for your Fleet Marine Force hat, where you worked for the Command General Fleet Marine Force Pacific out of Pearl Harbor, and for the base hat, you worked for the Commandant of the Marine Corps back there. And it was a very interesting job at the Mojave Desert, and it's the largest base the Marine Corps has. It constitutes about 660 square miles, the desert, about 900,000 acres. And it was part of where Patton trained his tank corps.
Kind of different type of training you could do there from what you needed for Vietnam.
Well, yes, it was, although the desert, and I expect it to be flat like you saw in the various pictures of Ben, of old guests or whatever. But it's very rugged terrain and very deep, high mountains. Some cover. The desert floor is covered with has a substance in it called caliche, which causes it to harden. It makes a crust. In fact, they have a little 9-hole golf course out there, and when they built it, here we're in the biggest sandbox in the United States, practically, and we had to import sand for the tracks, because when you put that sand out there in there, the caliche, the first rain coming, would harden, and the golf ball just bounced right out of the track, of course. But what it did was is that it when you flew over that area where Patton trained, you could still see the tank tracks. Way back in World War II, they trained that. And he'd build this huge sand table in the desert with catwalks around it, which he was perfectly depicted that section of the desert. And it must have been about as thick as almost as thick as a football field, you can imagine. About half as thick, about 50 square yards. And he would conduct these instructions to his officers, and his subordinates would, the junior officers, on these things, and they'd go out and practice it. And it's still out there, as a matter of fact. And the police, people have stolen a lot of the lumber. They should have made that a state little park. We used to go out there for picnics with our wives and children, and take the troops out there to see it. Very interesting area that was dotted with these oases. And they had a big exercise out there on the High Command, which extended from the Colorado River on over into my command. And they have the 2 armored divisions, 1st and 2nd armored, and airborne division, and the Army conducted a massive maneuver, the Army Air Force, out there. The name, those names, but I was a Marine observer on it and enjoyed it thoroughly. Got to know a lot of both of the commanders in the armored division. They're both great guys. Of course, I flagged one or the other, and it was a lot of fun, because I knew what the other fellow was going to do, but I couldn't tell them. They didn't want to see that. Extremely interesting. One section of that reservation is where they trained the Apollo for the moon deal. So there's one section that is looks very much like it. Another part, just off the base, there's a place called Vic Rock, and that's for all of the people that believe in these unidentified flying objects meet once a year. There's a fellow that owns a restaurant there, and he claims that one of them landed there. got away with the story. But it was an interesting area to be in. Delightful people we met. Some of the most interesting people we've ever met. Artists, talented artists. Some of the movie stars like James Cagney and Ralph Bellamy, they had places out there. And everyone, life's very informal. So from there, I received orders to Vietnam to go and be a General Westmoreland operation officer. They formed up a new, what they call, Combat Operations Center.
In 65?
65. They wanted a Marine general. Well, the Marines wanted, I mean, all the services wanted a particular job, but the chief of staff finally decided that the Marines raised it, so I was sent over to that job.
Have you received your second star by this time?
No, I received that just before I came home from that job.